Heterodorks. Heterodux dorks.
I'll be your alpaca.
Well, no, you'll be my pet tranny, but the main thing is I'll be able to go to the state fair for the tranny show, and I'll be able to wear a costume that matches my pet tranny's costume.
Does this mean I don't also get an alpaca costume?
That's right. We'll both go as alpacas. If I had an alpaca, I would have a turf tranny themed 4-H costume set for us.
Oh yeah, of course.
But I don't know if the alpaca would be the turf or the tranny.
All right, Nina, are you in this document?
Am I in this document? Oh, the document where you asked questions. Yeah, it's on my desktop here. But before Great. We begin, hello, turfs and trannies. Welcome to the Heterodorks podcast. I'm your co-host, Nina Paley.
I'm your other co-host, Corinna Cohn. We don't have a special guest.
We don't, but we have your listener questions. And interestingly, not a single person asked about whether our intro requires that all of our listeners be turfs and trannies.
We did have a couple of comments recently, including one person who said to us, I wanted to listen to your program, but the first couple of times I tried, I heard, hello, turfs and trannies, and I couldn't make it past that point.
Yes, she eventually came around, fortunately. But I would like the listeners to know that, yes, you are a turf or a tranny if you are listening to Heterodorks. Or you could be inter-turf tranny. It could be a spectrum.
I don't have anything to add to that.
Well, I mean, really, there's this question of whether turf and tranny is binary, bimodal, a spectrum. I mean, can you be a turf and a tranny? Like a, I forget what those are called. Hermaphrodite, like a turf tranny hermaphrodite where you're turf and tranny.
Isn't that sort of me?
Sort of, but you can't be a real turf. I mean, ultimately, you're a tranny. Because if you really were a turf, well, except that we know turf is just a slur, but technically right. It's supposed to. So how about if listeners, if you're female, you're a turf, and if you're male, you're a tranny.
That seems limiting.
Well, I mean, maybe our listeners will start identifying as non-binary.
That takes us, I think, to our first question, Nina.
Yes. Do you want to read it?
Sure. Let's jump to a question that was asked by two different listeners. One of them was the best people are who asks, I'm not sure if you've covered this, but I'm curious how you two came to know each other. And the other from Rosie Minded Fuzz who asks for our origin story.
Okay. That's, by the way, not the first question on the document that you sent me.
I know. I jumped ahead.
Okay. So our origin story, I was at the Illinois State Fair in Springfield, Illinois, and there was a 4-H tent and the tranny breeders were there showing the trannies. Yeah. And I wanted a pet tranny and there was a blue ribbon tranny there and I paid to have it bred with another prize winning tranny, thus producing Corinna. So Corinna came from a tranny mill. I adopted him or rescued him from the tranny mill. And that's how I got my pet tranny. Should we share the real origin story, which we have in fact shared before?
Sure. Let's do it briefly.
We were both at an event in Washington, D.C. in 2019, where some feminists were speaking, including Megan Murphy and Kelly J. Keen, although I guess she's not, doesn't call herself a feminist, but you know what we mean, and others. And I was hanging out with Lisa Marciano and Lisa knew Corinna and was going to have breakfast with Corinna and asked if I wanted to come. And I did. And I met Corinna and Corinna gave me almonds because I was very hangry at that time. And we had breakfast.
Hitchy. You had a stomach itch.
And yeah, I thought Corinna was cool. and took a selfie of us, and somebody on Facebook said, "Oh, you look like mother and daughter." And I thought, thank you so much. And learned that we, you know, learned that Corinna lived in Indianapolis, which is not super far from me. And we became friends. And then the podcast happened because
we used to meet once in a while over the pandemic to try to keep each other sort of grounded and a little bit of company, because I was going insane because of work stuff and you were going differently sane because of local cancellation stuff. And we had different things to talk about because we're both, I would say, curious-minded people, and we like pulling ideas out of the box and playing with them and rolling them back and forth and making vroom vroom noises with them. And then we both find that amusing, and we thought other people would find it amusing to listen to us do that.
It was Corinna's idea to do a podcast because I guess Blocked and Reported was going along, and we thought that that was a cool podcast. Corinna just announced one day we should do a podcast and then didn't do anything about it. So yep. While Corinna was busy not doing anything about it, I was bored and had some time. And so I did something about it. I learned how to do podcasts, got us an account with anchor.fm, which is now Spotify for podcasters. And here we are.
You want to do the next question?
Yes. Comes from our friend Lisa Sellen Davis. What's a feminist? What's the role of stigma in society? Where do you get your hair cut? Lisa, that's three questions. Should we answer all three of them or just the haircut part?
I think we start with the haircut, and maybe if we have time, we can get to the other two.
Okay, I cut my own hair, and I have since 2020 because I couldn't go to a hair cutter.
I go to see a stylist, and actually my stylist is similar to me in that she is a gender person and she also has gender burnout. And so we talk sometimes. I get my hair cut. We talk about gender burnout. Right. We have time for Lisa's other two questions now.
Yeah, I was pondering what a feminist is, and I think the word feminist is vastly overused. It's one of those words that has lost most of its meaning because it's used by many different people to movement to mean many different things. Some people, I mean, it has something to do with women, but now we don't have a solid definition of woman in society. I still think a woman's an adult human female, but many people who claim to be feminists do not think that. So right off the bat, I can't find that word meaningful when it's used by somebody that thinks men can be women. I'm better at explaining what a radical feminist is versus a liberal feminist. But I guess people that claim to be feminists, at the very minimum, it expresses some sort of concern with the well-being of women. That's about all it means now. What do you think feminist means?
I hear all sorts of people use the label, and it's almost easier to describe what is clearly not a feminist. So I think even some men's rights activists, I think, would qualify themselves as being feminist to some degree. So I would say that a feminist is basically anybody who doesn't want to enslave women.
Oh gosh, I wouldn't. I mean, there's people that call themselves feminists that do want to enslave women.
All right, everybody's a feminist.
Well, it's purely a... It's close to meaningless now. There are a lot of women that would never call themselves feminists who I would say are doing more for the well-being of women than many people who don't call themselves feminists.
What about the role of stigma in society? I don't want to take that one on because that's beyond my pay grade.
I have thought thought a lot about the role of stigma in society. I used to think stigmas were bad, bad, bad. And then I noticed pedophiles. Then I noticed pedophiles and this idea that pedophiles shouldn't be stigmatized. And I just thought, you know, I think stigma has a place in society. And I'm sorry that people suffer from it, but I think there needs to be taboos. Stigma is not the same thing as taboos, but it's similar. It's related. Some things, you can't eliminate them. You cannot eliminate certain people's propensities for certain things. You cannot eliminate people's like weird fetishes if they develop them, but you do not need to celebrate them. You can, in fact, condemn them in society. And that's not fair for the people who didn't choose them. It's not fair, but life isn't fair. And I think that society works better and is healthier if certain behaviors are stigmatized.
Like women wearing pants.
Exactly. They should be burned at the stake. It's better for society. I don't have all of the answers, but I do think there's been extensive study of taboos and that taboos have social benefits even while they're problematic.
Okay. All right. The next question is Mara. Do you have any advice on how to be less angry and instead more cheerful? That's because I tweeted recently that it takes more work to be cheerful instead of angry, but it's worth the effort.
What do you mean it takes more work?
That when something crappy is happening and you feel offended or hurt and that you want to react to that, particularly react in a way that shows your anger or displeasure, that you, if you want to be a cheerful person instead, you have to pay attention to how you are feeling and then remember that you choose how you react to things. You don't choose what happens to you entirely, but you do choose how you react to it. And so being attentive to how you feel and then choosing to be cheerful about it instead of angry about it does take work, but when you choose to be cheerful about it, that is actually still a sincere way of dealing with the thing that's bothering you.
I mostly agree with that. My only disagreement is about the amount of work that it takes. There's a couple things going on when I react really negatively to something. One of them is the rut, the habit that I am in, of reacting negatively to something. So it takes some work to guide myself out of that rut. Like the rut is the path of least resistance. So in that respect, it's no work to fall into that rut. However, being in the rut is a lot of work. It takes a lot of energy and it takes a toll to be that angry and just really unhappy. This question, the first thing that I think of when I see this question is, well, why do you want to be cheerful? Like, what's wrong with being angry? Why would you want to be cheerful instead? And I think the answer is that generally it feels better and lighter to be cheerful. So anger is in some ways more draining, takes more work. Not always. I'm actually a fan of anger. I think anger is excellent fuel for action when you're conscious about it. Anger is a really good motivator. It's an excellent drive for art and creativity. It can be detrimental if you don't have an outlet for it, if you're not actually using it to fuel something. It will burn up your body. I did a Mimi and Eunice cartoon. Said anger is like rocket fuel. It's great if you have a rocket and bad if you don't.
All right.
Should I read the next question?
Sure.
Okay. Shellac says, I see the gender wars going national with the upcoming presidential election. The Democrats are only digging in their heels, so this is a win-win issue for Republicans. What are your predictions? I personally think once the normies know what is going on, it will be over.
Never underestimate the Republicans to fuck up a sure thing. The Republicans are really, really bad at popular politics. So while they really have an opportunity to latch on to this issue and talk about how horrifying it is to sex change children and to put men in women's prisons, while they should be playing at it like a 5, they'll probably crank it up to a 12 or a 13 and cause the independents to feel some revulsion at how much bitterness and hatred is coming from the Republican mouthpieces. That's my prediction, because Republicans are dumb, even though Democrats are really dumb.
I have no specific predictions on politics. Yeah, I just, my only prediction is it's going to be bad, whatever it is. Speaking of political parties, boxers or briefs?
Why is that speaking of political parties?
Well, there are two of them.
That was Samsara who asked this question.
Yes, boxers or briefs?
I'm sure I'm not old enough to get this reference.
I don't know. I mean, I mostly wear briefs, but I have some boxers also. The main thing is that my underwear is mostly merino wool. So be they boxers or briefs, merino wool is comfortable and breathes.
You have merino wool boxers?
I do. I mostly have briefs, but I get boxers because I like merino wool bike shorts, but the ones that I've liked the most, they don't make anymore. So I'm trying to approximate them and also get them affordably. So sometimes I buy men's like long boxers to Wow. wear as bike shorts on my recumbents. They don't need padding. And as a consequence, I have some. And there's one pair of them that I really, really like.
I didn't know that my co-host was wearing men's underwear.
There should be a stigma against that.
Okay. Housefrau asks, I want to know, what music do you like? Rolling Stones or Kendrick Lamar? What's your favorite movie and TV series? Corinna. Housefrau thinks that I like The Wire or Breaking Bad or Sopranos. What are your favorite books? Does Nina play an instrument?
That's a lot of questions.
It is. Let's just do them really quick. Okay. What music do you like?
Me?
Yeah.
I don't really like the Rolling Stones or Kendrick Lamar.
Okay. What's my favorite movie and TV series? I don't know if I have a favorite, but I like TV series like Justified, where there's a lot of eye candy on the screen. What are your favorite books, Nina?
I'm reading a good book right now called The Latecomer. And yeah, I like books. But I mostly like staring at my phone screen, so I'm not reading as much of them lately. I've been very much affected by a couple books, including Four Arguments for the Elimination of Television and Impro by Keith Johnstone and some other ones.
All right. And then does Nina play an instrument? Yes, she does. She plays bass sax.
No, I play kazoo. And I used to play nose flute and slide whistle.
All right.
There's a question just for me above that question.
What are your favorite books?
No.
Somebody, I missed one.
Some Faith says, oh, also to Nina specifically, how do you keep yourself from getting angry, frustrated when TRA come on and start, say, very dehumanizing statement about what makes a woman slash man? I do get angry and frustrated, sort of, but mostly I'm curious. So there's no reason for me to react when people are coming on and saying stuff like that. I'm curious and I want to hear what they have to say, even if I really don't agree with it. And I am really happy that people come on to Heterodorks that we disagree with and speak so that people can listen to them, because I think that our listeners are smart And I don't have to demonstrate a negative reaction to a speaker that I don't agree with. Our listeners can have their own reactions.
Okay. Sasha Aguilar asks, what is your advice for educators?
Do you have any advice?
Learn to code.
That's good advice.
All right. Can we do a little bit better? These are people who are stuck in institutions where they're being required to affirm the wrong sex identities of their gender-confused students.
You want me to do better? I can't.
I would say at least one thing is when you have colleagues that are brave enough to speak out about this issue, stand up with them. Be willing to defend them in public. Even if you're not going to be brave enough to agree with them in public, be brave enough to say that they're entitled to their viewpoint without being at risk for losing their jobs. At least have that much courage.
Also good advice. Plus learn to code.
Plus learn to code.
I guess I'll read the next question. Faith asks, how can transsexuals and TERFs reach a compromise? Also, why does it sometimes feel like transsexuals don't want to take responsibility for how their community has been taken over by fetishists, and why they rely so heavily on other people groups to their own safety?
Wow. There's a number of ways that transsexuals and TERFs can compromise.
No, there's not.
You're right. Like always, Nina. And folks, that's how you do it. That is how you do it.
You just decide to be cheerful, okay?
Just grin and bear it. One of the things that I recommend to my brothers out there who identify as women is that if you really do want to have solidarity with women, that it's time to actually give up the routine and let women have all their stuff back. Have their words back, have their spaces back, have their activities back. It was great while it lasted, and people who wanted to assimilate were not trying to cause a lot of waves, but that time is over. So if you want solidarity with women, let them have their stuff back.
Do you think they do want solidarity with women?
Some do.
I mean, her next question is, transsexuals don't want to take responsibility for how their community has been taken over by fetishists.
Yep. I don't agree with the premise of the question. We're outnumbered 10 to 1 or 20 to 1. So it sort of doesn't matter.
So you don't agree with not taking responsibility?
Well, it's what do you do? What do you do? The people who are in the gender ideology have all the positions of authority in the NGOs and in the media. So what do you do?
Yeah. I mean, you can condemn it, which you have been doing, and which some others have been doing.
Yep.
But what happens when trannies condemn the outrageous behavior done under the so-called trans umbrella is they get sort of booted out from the so-called,
or put on a list.
Yeah. Trans community.
Yeah. It do be like that. Mateja asks, what is your advice for countries that are not that deep into gender ideology, but starting to show signs it will go in that direction? I'm just going to abbreviate it to that. Learn to code. Immigrate.
Yeah, advice for countries. I don't have advice for countries. I mean, this is a
revolution.
This is a force of nature. I guess social contagions are a force of nature, and unfortunately, mob behavior is a force of nature that runs through humans, and human beings are a force of nature that run through the planet, killing it. And
the planet is a force of nature that runs through the solar system, sweeping up asteroids and other debris.
But these are much bigger forces than we are. So things like advice. I mean, people are giving advice all the time, right? Be kind, people say, or pay attention, or think for yourself. And advice doesn't really matter. It's like advising a cloud to rain or not rain. And the next question is from Lisa. Do you envision an end to the so-called gender wars? Who wins and how?
We've talked about this a couple of times too, so I'll be brief. But the end of the gender wars does not look like a happy ending for anybody, really. There's always going to be the transgender people from this point forward. They are always going to be making claims. But I think that we're going to hit a point in law and policy, at least in the Western countries, where sex and gender identity are clearly distinguished from one another, and that in many, but not all cases, sex will be the more important factor in policy. And in the places where it is considered the ruling factor, it will make the trans people mad. And then in the cases where gender identity is considered the ruling factor, it will make the materialists mad. And that's how I see it ending.
That's not really ending.
I see an equilibrium there.
Oh, okay. I think that conservative traditionalists are going to be ascendant for a while. I think all of this has been a great gift to conservative traditionalists and a lot of people who had rejected conservative traditionalist ideas are reconsidering them thanks to the mess of the gender wars. So I think they're going to enjoy more popularity than they have for a while because of this, as part of the backlash.
Thanks, gender warriors.
Yep, good job.
AJ Flex asks, can you discuss at some point the link between AI, for example, ChatGPT, and its heightened sensitivity around using terms like woman or female, etc.? I found it very much far left on that spectrum, so interesting to see bias in tech. Well, Nina, what do you think?
Believe it or not, I have never chatted with ChatGPT.
Wow.
GTP, sorry, whatever it is. I have never chatted with a chatbot. I haven't spoken with AIs yet. I've seen their art.
God, you're so out of date.
Yeah, I know. So anyway, I can't answer that question. How about you, Corinna?
Like, do you still make phone calls?
I do, but not on a landline.
This is sort of beyond my skills to be able to answer, but we know that the large language models, which is what ChatGPT is, that's the form of artificial intelligence it is, have been tuned and tweaked to meet the certain political viewpoints of the companies that own them. So what I would be very, very concerned about, and what I am concerned about, is the potential corruption of our discourse as more and more ideas get filtered through or generated from ChatGPT. And the number of ideas, or the width of the playing field for idea generation, gets necked down to what is acceptable to the artificial intelligence.
Sounds good. Somebody whose name I can't pronounce asks, what qualities do you admire the most in each other? Why? Are there any areas of contention between you that are irresolvable?
The name that you cannot pronounce, Nina, is An Inky Darkness.
Oh, An Inky Darkness, the deadly thing.
I admire Nina's literacy.
Come on, what else do you admire about me? Come on, spit it out.
Nina, although this isn't directly a character trait. The fact that you put in 100-mile bike rides at least once a week, sometimes more than once a week, and that you are so doggedly determined to do these things shows a real firmness or deliberate set of your character that I just trust you because you seem to have so much drive. I think that that's very admirable.
And I trust you because you have shown yourself to be trustworthy. You are actually a very responsible and responsive friend. I think that you are a mensch. You are a deeply good person. Probably in terms of basic social connections, probably better than me. Because for one thing, you're willing to wipe ice cream off of a 3-year-old's face. I am not. Do I admire that though?
Yeah, I don't know.
I know it's better. I know it makes you a better person, but I don't know if I admire that.
Definitely subject to that sort of smooth brain manipulation of taking care of children.
I'm in wonder of it. It's like, my God, how is he willing to do that? He doesn't even seem to be disgusted.
Well, when you clean up after an incontinent cat often enough, then cleaning up after a 3-year-old with ice cream on his face is pretty easy.
Anyway, I admire the qualities in Corinna that I admire in anyone, such as intelligence, thoughtfulness, emotional maturity. But we do have some areas of contention that are irresolvable, some pretty obvious ones.
What leaps to mind, Nina?
I'm vegetarian and you're keto.
Oh, gosh. Well, I make quite a bit of allowance for you because I know that you're not really vegetarian. That's not your true authentic self.
How would you know? I mean, I'm not because I eat fish sometimes.
That's right.
And I'm not vegan.
Right. You do miss having delicious steak and bacon.
Yeah, not really.
God.
And the thing is, I like carbs. I like carbohydrates.
No, those are bad for you.
Carbohydrates are wonderful. I love them.
Especially grains. Grains are particularly bad for you.
Well, there's not a lot of other sources of carbohydrates. I guess there's fruits and there's tubers, which aren't grains. I love them, but keto people hate tubers the most. They hate potatoes. They think potatoes are Satan.
I am open to some policy arguments for restricting abortion.
Such as?
Such as, well, I think maybe if you're in the third trimester, unless there is a threat to the mother's life or the father's life, we know how it goes, then maybe it's reasonable to prohibit abortion past the point where the fetus would be viable outside of the womb.
What if when the kid was born, it was like guaranteed to die?
Well, I think that would be one of those exceptions.
Yeah. So lots of exceptions.
I wouldn't say though that if a pregnancy can be brought to term in a healthy way for both the mother and the baby, that there should be legal abortion in the third trimester. I could see why people would want to restrict that.
Yeah, I can see why people would want to restrict that too.
Well, we're supposed to have contention over this.
I mean, you're talking about the third trimester. There's not a whole lot of people that argue for that, especially when they'll usually bring up these cases where it's important and necessary. And we agree with those cases. Like, we agree that it should be okay
All
to
right.
do that. So...
Well, I could see a case for eliminating public schools.
Oh, yeah, I can too.
Shit.
Sorry. And also,
what if we've corrupted each other?
When we're saying this, it's not like you're saying, I absolutely support this with 100% certainty. You're just saying, yeah, I see a case for this. I see why people argue for this. And I'm just like, yeah, I do too. I may or may not, like if I investigated, if I actually have to stand up for something, I would think about it a lot more carefully, but I certainly see cases for these. Sure. Yeah. And I hate public schools. I hated them when I went to them, and I fantasized about burning mine to the ground or blowing them up. And
oh, that's true.
I see a lot of bad come from them. To actually make policy based on this, I mean, I would have to think it through much more seriously. But yes, there's a strong case. There's a lot wrong with public schools, and has been, not just in like the last 8 years. Like, gender ideology being taught in public schools is terrible, but there was a lot terrible about public schools before that came along.
All right. Prosecosaurus asks, things are shifting as far as law and policies in the UK and some American states, but how long do you predict it will take for gender ideology to lose its grip societally, culturally? Some say it will happen quickly. Others say a generation due to indoctrination in schools.
Whew. Yeah. I believe the children are the future. And I think that they are going to find gender bullshit uncool because the adults are so into it. So culturally, the children shall lead, because nothing is less cool than a middle-aged suburban housewife deciding that she's a trans man and changing her name to Rowan.
So bold, so brave, so handsome.
That's my hope anyway, that it will just burn itself out because it's so obviously uncool. And, you know, all these corporations are pushing it. So hopefully the healthy spirit of youthful rebellion will kick in. And
you know what else is uncool, Nina?
Me?
Scientology.
I mean, Scientology declined, didn't it?
It did. I think we'll see the same thing with the gender ideology.
Hope so. This is just hoping. I mean, it could be around for a long time. Also, let me clarify something. I've said many times that I believe in the law of conservation of evil. So we could win, you know, we could win the gender war and gender ideology could decline, but something just as bad, if not worse, is going to pop up in some other area of the culture where we never expected it.
Great. I'm looking forward to making episodes on that topic.
Yeah. Lena says, what is your best advice for staying open to new views and avoiding being reabsorbed into an ideology? In other words, how do you safeguard your own open mind and not slip back into groupthink?
I have an ideology. And my ideology is there to help protect me from other ideologies. I guess it's good that we have that. But my ideology incorporates ideas like, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe somebody has an idea that is worth considering. Maybe there's information that I haven't considered. So I try to, my ideology is try to use reason and data and experience to develop the most useful and accurate approach to any particular social question or problem, and then keep in mind that I might not be right about it.
You call that an ideology?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I'm shortening it tremendously, but there's a whole system of arguments and positions and logic and beliefs and values that go behind that. I call it liberalism, but that is not what the word describes very well right now for most people.
So there's another ideology called Christianity, whose adherents, we might say, don't act very Christian. Like, whether one aligns themselves with this ideology consciously or not does not seem to determine whether they actually follow it in their practice. So, yeah, liberalism, as you describe it, sounds great. I think there are probably a lot of extremely illiberal people who would insist that they're liberal.
Okay.
And aren't.
They may, but what do we do about that?
Not much. Looking at this question again, best advice for staying open to new views and avoiding being reabsorbed into an ideology. I mean, first, we got to ask the question of why we want to do that. Why do we want to stay open to new views and avoid being reabsorbed into an ideology? Why is that desirable? I think it is. But one of the reasons I think it is because I'm like that. I'm very think for myself-y compared to many other people, not all, but many. But it also comes with a cost when you don't think tribally, you may experience more loneliness and also danger because we're groupish animals. So I wouldn't assume this is the best way for everyone to be. Of course, it's the way I would like everyone to be because it would prevent a lot of social problems that have harmed me especially. But I don't know if this is right for everyone. You know? I don't know if open-mindedness to new views while avoiding being reabsorbed in an ideology was right for more people. I think more people would be doing that. But they don't. And I don't know if there's... I guess I would have more questions for the questioner. Maybe she can expand on that. What do you think? What do you think?
Well, I'm worried, Nina, because I just answered that. And now you're like, hey, supposing you hadn't heard that question, what would you... If you hadn't answered it, what would you say?
If I hadn't answered it? What? If you hadn't answered it?
I already answered it.
Yeah, you answered it. If you hadn't answered the question, what would I say?
No. You just asked me, what do I think? I said I already answered it.
Well, no, you answered how, but you didn't answer...
How what?
You answered how you can stay open-minded without getting sucked into an ideology or reabsorbed into an ideology. But you didn't say why that's desirable. Why is it desirable?
Oh, why is that... Why is it desirable?
Why is
to
it
not get sucked into?
Yeah, why is
okay,
it?
All right. It's desirable because look, if you always believe that there's a chance that you're making a mistake, you're potentially going to be alert to that sooner than if you have a lot of confidence that it's not possible at all that your ideology could be mistaken. So you might find yourself making small corrections more often, but that's a lot safer than finding out that you've made a large bet based on an assumption that just isn't validated, and that assumption has its root inside of your ideology.
But
I'll give you an example.
Okay.
So let's say that you had I'm going to pick on feminists here for a second here. Let's say that you had an ideological belief that marriage is a form of slavery and that children take away your independence and limit your ability to grow as an individual, and that therefore you would not get married and that you won't have children. And it's not so much that you don't want to have kids or that you don't want to be married, it's that you have a real belief that your only a way to become an actualized human being is to avoid those things. And that's on the basis of your ideology. That's a huge bet to lose if you get past the age of being able to have children and then you realize that you really wanted to have them, that you wanted to be married, and that you realize that even if you get married now, it's too late to start a family, right? That's a huge bet that you're making by applying a particular set of beliefs or ideas or values.
Do you think that there are women that have done that?
Yes.
See, I do not. All of my days when I was like an overpopulation awareness activist
and yes.
really trying to get people to have fewer kids, which I know it's like dumb, but the reason it's dumb is that people who want to have kids are going to have kids. That's what I learned from that. That no matter what they believed, if they had a desire to have kids, they were going to have kids.
Yeah, but you succeeded, Nina. The liberals are having children at lower than the replacement rate, and the conservatives are having children barely above the replacement rate.
But that is not because of me.
I think you give yourself too little credit, Nina.
No, it is really not because of me at all. It's because of all kinds of other reasons, some of which are heinous. I wanted people to think about it and, you know, align their behaviors with their beliefs about the environment and things like that. But yeah. That's not why. And in fact, there's this book called Maybe Two by Bill McKibben, or no, Maybe One by Bill McKibben, who earlier as an environmentalist was dead set against having kids. And then he changed his mind. Why did he change his mind? Because people change their minds. And then this whole book was a rationalization of it. So I concluded from
traitor.
I concluded from that and from lots of other experiences that no matter what you know, no matter what you believe, the drive to have kids, if you have it, you're going to have kids. Unless you have difficulty forming a relationship that enables you to have kids. And I think that a lot of like this ideology, this thing that you blame on ideology, it could very easily be women who for other reasons have difficulty forming relationships with the opposite sex, mm-hmm. where they would want to have kids, and the ideology, you know, gives them a supports that. It supports that they're having this difficulty. Because I have heard of and probably talked to women that did really want to have kids, but what kept them from doing it was just the inability or unwillingness to form a relationship with a man that would impregnate them. And I would not chalk that up to ideology. I would say that there is more going on with them, and that the ideology is a convenient support, but that's not the driver.
Well, I don't know those women, so I can't really say.
I just have a really hard time believing that a woman who like wants to be married and has a kid wouldn't get married and have a kid. I mean, there's countless stories, for example, of women who, when they're in college, they're lesbians, and then they end up getting married to men and having kids. And it's like, you know, it just doesn't last. It's like if you're these drives that people have exceed even ideologies, I think. Mating and reproduction is more primal than that.
Sex and food, big drivers.
Yeah. Except it's so easy to reproduce when you're young and fertile that there are women who will do that who were not suited to it at all.
They could use a little bit more ideology.
They could use more, they should more exposure to it to know that it's actually okay to not do that.
All right. We have a question from Enga Sojid. Is cis really a slur? I don't remember hearing you two's opinion on this matter. The term definitely shows that gender theory academics have a hold on language, but I don't see that necessarily translates to slur. Hey, TERF.
Hey, Tranny.
Is cis a slur?
Yeah, I think most of the time it is. I think it's not in chemistry, but I think it's an obnoxious word. And is it a slur? I mean, we got to define slur, right? Like if I were a police officer in the UK and somebody said, "You look like my cis nan," I would arrest them, especially if they were autistic and 16 years old. So in that sense,
so it is a slur.
It's hate speech.
It is, yeah.
But no, I don't know. I mean, it's a dumb word. The mere use of the word frames everything in terms of this ideology that's dumb. Mm-hmm. I don't like it. But you know, is a slur defined as Nina doesn't like it? I don't know. A lot of women don't like it. I do think people can use it without any intended malice at the person they're using it on. A lot of people use this god-awful language without thinking about it.
Uh-huh.
So I think it is damaging and destructive, but I don't think it necessarily reflects any malice on the part of the user.
I agree with you.
But let's not say it. It's stupid and obnoxious, and I hate it.
I think when you use it to describe somebody without their consent, if somebody has not said that they want to be called that word, that it is just as well not to use that word to describe them.
Here's another question. The TLDR version is, quote, how will society adapt over the coming decades when the large cohort of kids and young people transitioning now grow up and age? Ooh, that's a good question.
Who asked it?
That was asked by Annette Pacey.
Great. Shall I take a stab at this?
Stab it.
All right. What I notice from the large cohort of kids and young people who transition is that they seem to have a very difficult time becoming mature adults. They seem to be trapped in a state of adolescence far into their 20s. And I'll tell you, it wasn't that different with me. I grew up more in my 20s than I see some of these young people growing up now, but I was still probably 5 to 6 years behind my peers when it came to adult socialization. And that was with me being pretty much the only trans in a cis world. I'm using that without malice.
Yep. You called the world cis, though, so you hate the world.
I do. It's the world is a slur. With these young people who are able to ensconce themselves in this subculture of gender navel gazing, I think it's going to be a lot harder for them to really step up and achieve genuine independence and adulthood. So I think what we should expect to see is that we'll have generations of, maybe not generations, we'll see people who are in their 20s and 30s and 40s just failing to click into adult behaviors, maybe even 50s. It's sort of a iatrogenic infantilization.
Is that it?
That's it. That's what I see. What about you?
Well, one thing we're going to have to adapt to is more masculinized women. And
yes, like me?
No, not like you. Masculinized women and feminized men.
Ah.
But women, including feminists, including radical feminists, are going to have to acknowledge these masculinized women. And they are not prepared for it. We are not prepared for it. So we're going to have to work that out somehow. Women are much more cautious about having anyone they think might be a man enter their private spaces. So women are much more on guard now than they were 10 years ago, for good reason. And yet there is this small cohort of masculinized women that need women, that need access to these women's spaces, and are going to face difficulties, even from the same women that want them to identify as women, that want them to come back to womanhood but are they prepared to actually let them?
There'll be some fighting, huh?
There's always fighting. But this is something I hope will get hashed out. And I really do not want these masculinized women to be forced to perform even more gender than they would have. Because one way that they cope with the situation is by femming it up so that they look more feminine and therefore less threatening to women who are on high alert. And
I don't blame them. That's what I do too.
And that is an ironic thing about all of this, this decade of gender, I guess, where 6 years ago, gender critical radical feminists were saying they were gender abolitionists and we were very gender critical. And I still am gender critical, but it's become clearer to me how gender functions in society and how desperate people are, including women who otherwise identify as gender critical. They want reassurance that someone is a woman beyond merely their being female.
So they can always break out their voter card and show that it says Democrat on it. or labor. I don't want to be too parochial.
We've got a conundrum here. We have created a conundrum for everybody. And fortunately, it's not that huge a proportion of the population, but it's big enough now that we're going to have to acknowledge it. I don't know. I got no answers, but we're left with a problem. Even if people stop transing tomorrow, this generation is going to be there.
You might not have answers, Nina, but do you know what I have?
A cat?
Yes, that's a great guess. I have one last question for us for this podcast.
Okay.
This is from Flower Child, who asks, I would love to hear each of you articulate the extent to which you believe second wave feminism, particularly this distinction made between sex and gender, has been a factor in getting us where we are today.
Oh, man. The short answer would be yes. That's way too short, though.
Oh, yeah.
It's sort of like, you know, does broccoli contain a carcinogen? Yes. It also contains things that will protect you against cancer. It contains all of these things. Broccoli is good for you, just like second wave feminism is good for you. But apparently it does contain this carcinogen. So when you process it and extract just the carcinogen and call that second wave feminism, it leads to societal problems.
California has slapped a label on broccoli, I think.
Does it say broccoli or does it say something else?
It says this product has been determined to have carcinogenic effects by the health authorities of California or something to that effect.
Really? They're labeling broccoli? Because I know they label everything else.
Well, there you go.
Usually things that aren't edible, like pillows and stuff.
Pillows, I don't know. Depends on the pillow.
Anyway, you know, that separation of gender and sex in the healthy, wholesome, whole context of second wave feminism is perfectly healthy and won't hurt you. But when it's extracted and made into artificial carcinogen pills, it can kill you. That's my non-answer to that otherwise good question.
I have to say that really was a non-answer, Nina.
Thank you. What's your answer to it?
One trait that I have noticed advocates of second wave feminism defend is the notion of the blank slate, that men and women are born more or less the same, and that men are the way they are because of socialization, and that women are the way they are because of patriarchy. And that if it weren't for just patriarchy in general, that there would be a lot more equality between men and women, and that there would be many fewer differences in personalities or inclinations between men and women. I was first brought into some agreement with this argument after I read Cordelia Fine's book, The Gender Delusion, but I have subsequently become more influenced to the idea that there is a biological component to the mental development and the interests and the behaviors of men and women that have developed over the course of our evolution as a species, and that it now seems preposterous to me that there could be a blank slate, that men and women can grow up to be exactly like one another without any consideration for the role of biology. But I would say that that blank slate argument made it much easier for gender ideology to get a toehold. Maybe that's the carcinogen that you were referring to.
I was just referring to just the idea of looking at sex and gender separately. I think, even though it was apparently Judith Butler who came up with this, I do think that gender is largely performance. I do think that there's lots of behaviors that can at least, they are somewhat related to will. Some of them are ingrained, maybe through socialization, maybe through innate aptitude, maybe through a combination of both. I mean, almost certainly through a combination of both, right? Like, I don't think all behaviors are conditioned. I think plenty of behaviors emerge organically from material conditions. But socialization is still a thing. Anyway, there's so much about gender that is performance. For example, wearing makeup. Like, that is something a person decides to do. They may be profoundly conditioned to do it, and in fact, many women are. So I've spoken to quite a few women lately who are profoundly neurotic about makeup, profoundly attached to it, like genuinely, like they hate it, they hate makeup, and they know that it's harming their skin, and they cannot not wear it. They are so anxious not wearing makeup. I don't think there's a lot of men that are like that. And I don't think that that is biologically determined. I think that makeup is like a cultural, it has to do with our culture specifically. It is very much associated with the female sex. And this is like ground into them from an early age that they need to do this thing. And I just asked this question on Twitter, like, which would you rather feel compelled to wear, makeup or hijab? And most of the answers are makeup. And I don't think I communicated what I really meant by that question well. Because what I was trying to get at is that women who wear makeup, many women who wear makeup really do feel compelled to do it. Like it is not like a fun thing for them, or they might sort of think it's fun, but they are deeply anxious about not wearing it.
All right.
Right. So I was talking about the difference between gender and sex. Right. So anyway, I think that it's great that people brought this up. I think it's great that women thought about this and talked about it and questioned it. And Sheila Jeffries wrote the book Beauty and Misogyny, which is a very important book. And the fact is that being a woman does not mean that you have to wear makeup. And it's just, these are important ideas, but they don't mean that okay. men can be women. And they don't mean that, I mean, they mean the opposite of this, right? Like separating gender and sex was supposed to do the opposite of what it did.
It seems like in retrospect, though, that if you're separating those two things, that it would be obvious that the next thing is to completely mix and match them.
I mean, it may be obvious now, but I mean, only because people did that. But really what I think is people freaking love gender. And being gender critical is like being atheist. It's not natural to most people. It is very natural to some. Nobody should be compelled to perform gender, just like nobody should be compelled to adhere to a religion. But people seem to need gender as much as they need religion.
All right. Any other remarks before we wrap up this Q&A episode?
Probably. Somebody asked a good question on Twitter recently, but not in this thread. Oh yeah, they asked how I did these 100-mile bike rides and had energy for anything else. And the answer is I don't have energy for anything else. And that's why I only do it in the summer, and I do my creative things other times when it's cold.
Makes sense. Nina, I'm thinking about microdosing testosterone.
I think that's awesome.
I saw this article, I think it was in Slate, that was about this particular middle-aged lady who felt enervated and tired, and that she and her friends have been taking tiny doses of testosterone and they feel like they have more energy. And I thought, I could be like these middle-aged ladies.
Yes, indeed. I believe I sent you that article.
You did.
And I happen to have, I assume, I have an okay internal production of my own testosterone because I seem to be all right. Plus,
I'm jealous.
Plus, I have a fuzzy little mustache.
Aw.
Fuzzy little menopause mustache. My pride and joy.
Oh, you're my favorite she, they.
Thought you were going to say sheep.
No, you're not that fuzzy.
My mustache is blonde and very, very faint. It just, I didn't have it prior to menopause. But yeah, ovaries make testosterone. They don't just make estrogen. They make testosterone too.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So anyway, hopefully you too will have a fuzzy, tiny, barely noticeable peach fuzz mustache from your experiments. And then you too will truly look like a menopausal woman.
That's my goal.
Although I gotta say, when you said that you were like socially behind, what'd you say, like seven or 8 years behind in your social development? You also look at least seven or eight years younger than you are. So that's kind of freaky.
Yep. All right, TERFs and trannies.
All right, TERFs and trannies, thanks for listening to us once again. Hang in there.
Yep, bye.
Bye.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening to Heterodorks. You can support us by visiting our page at anchor.fm/heterodorks or by supporting Nina Paley at patreon.com/Nina Paley. You can also support us by writing a review on your favorite podcast site, such as Apple Podcasts. Thank you.